Welcome to the Buckhead Church Podcast. If you want to learn how you can be more engaged with our church, check us out online at buckheadchurch.org, or you can connect with us on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter. I hope the following message inspires you to take the next step forward in your faith journey. Check it out.
Welcome again to this podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, welcome to you as well. This is a resource that we are creating that is, the mission of it is just to inspire people to follow Jesus at home and at work. And we hope that this will do that. This was a conversation that I got to have with a guy that I've been a fan of for a while. His name is Dave Barnes. Dave Barnes is known really as a singer-songwriter, musician in Nashville, but he's more than just that. He's also absolutely hilarious. He's done a comedy tour, and these videos on his Instagram that he's been releasing during the quarantine are absolutely hilarious. And I hope that they'll bring some levity to your day. But the new album that we're discussing on this has been the soundtrack in the background of our house for the past couple of weeks. And I think it's one that you would really enjoy. And so we wanted to bring you this conversation with Dave Barnes just as a way to encourage you, inspire you to be able to hopefully follow Jesus more closely wherever you are and whatever you're doing. And I hope that you enjoy it. So here it is, a conversation with Dave Barnes.
There he is, Mr. America.
Dave, hello, my friend. How are you?
You look amazing. How do you
Thank
look
you.
So...
I...
So like, lit and beautiful.
Oh, because I'm lit. When we quarantined, they brought over this full, I've got this incredible camera, this lighting package, this microphone here. I feel so, it's not as cool as your studio, but I really want to talk about, I mean, I don't want to spend the entire time talking about your characters on Instagram, but I do want to spend the majority of the time talking about them.
I want you to hear me say something. I've had so much fun doing them, so I will literally talk about them as much as you want to.
Your Insta story, I think it was yesterday, about, well, yeah, just how honest you are about, look, they crack me up, okay? I don't know what's coming up next. That's true. I mean, that really is true. Like, you're not scripting that. It's just straight from that. This is just totally selfish. Well, let me say two things. One, we have five kids. These are our children right here.
Yep.
And we have a two-year-old, this kid. His, you know, when kids grab your phone and request something, his current request is the toilet paper. So he loves and he'll walk around just saying baby butter, baby butter, baby butter. but can you give Buckhead Church just a little snippet of your high school drama teacher? What is his name?
Oh, Mr. Nance.
Mr. Nance.
Yeah. He was kind of the archetype for me because, you know,
is that a real like, person?
None of these people are real people. Okay. They are in my little, you know, Dave. But it's weird because he is what I love about humor. That's kind of weird. I'm saying I love what that it's like, he's trying to keep it together, but then he's also got this deep pain. He's having to shove. Wait, he misses his
about
ex-girlfriend.
Debbie. Yes.
By Debbie, sweet Debs. But he's also a mentor to these young, talented kids who sent me a message on Facebook. And you're like, no, they didn't. Or like, they didn't even mean to do that. You know, it's like, and so it's that really weird, it's that person that you're like, you just got to love them / they're living in so much pain that they're, but no, I'm not. You know, and just the drama teacher is a whole, like that, when you just say those two words.
Yes.
Already
it opens up
that.
So much. Hey, so I said to somebody at work the other day, I said, hey, I'm trying to get Dave Barnes on this Buckhead Church podcast, completely because I am so obsessed with all your characters that you're doing. And I thought, you know what? He's got an album. Maybe he'd want to come and talk about it, which of course I would say it because you're on here, but Dreaming in Electric Blue is fantastic. And so the person texted me back and said, it's ridiculous that God would make someone with so much talent that you are.
Is that my mom?
Yeah, it was your mom, which I know might be weird to you that I'm texting with your mom, but we've become the best of friends. But to be able to be without you, I love that you started the album out with that song. Such a beautiful song. But the album is so diverse. It's got so many great songs. What? Give us like a little bit of the background of Dave Barnes. What were you like as a child? I mean, yeah, were you writing love songs or were you making people laugh?
I was making people laugh about love songs. And that's where yeah, you're welcome. No, you know, so my dad is a pastor. He's a retired pastor now, but dad, was a PCA pastor his whole career. Grew up great, great, great parents, like none of the weird drama because they were just really wonderful people. Still are. But grew up in a really small town in Mississippi. And I think that matters because there wasn't a venue for what I was eventually going to sort of grow into with sort of my voice, if you will, as a personality, be it singing or whatever, or humor, or whatever. So I didn't really, there was no way for me to sort of get into that. I liked music really early on and it was always, interesting to me. We moved to Knoxville when I was in high school. And that's when I joined a band, a Christian band, and we'd play around and I played drums and I was like, man, I love doing this. Now
you were not the front man?
No, I was the drummer. I didn't sing. Wow. And so two things were happening at the same time that I didn't realize. I was starting to do a lot of skits. Like I'll never forget. I mean, this is kind of an embarrassing admission, but I went on this and I'd never done anything like this before, but I went on this youth group retreat with another group in Mississippi. And we went down to Florida and we would do these nightly sort of like, you know, teaching. And then they'd do like a skit. And I'd never done anything like that. But randomly somebody asked me like, hey, you should be the host of this fake dating skit we're going to do. And I had I was probably eighth grade. I didn't mind being on stage. I never did. I kind of enjoyed it, but I'd never done anything like that. And we just improv the skit. And I walked off stage as like, I just killed that. Like people were losing it. I saw these pretty girls laughing, which is a very new feeling for me. Mm-hmm. But I remember that being this thing in me that was like, well, that was interesting. Mm. Like, I didn't even know that I could be funny like that, you know? So that was happening right as I was kind of falling in love with music. And so they kind of always were parallel. Like when I got to school, you know, me and a handful of other students and six different staff started Campus Crusade for Christ at MTSU. Mm-hmm. So I would do a skit every week that we would never write. They would be like, hey, we need to promote the Christmas conference. Like you got 10 minutes before we start. And I'd be like, all right, we're hitchhiking. And so I'd have a straight man. One of my two best friends were always up there and I would just have to, so that was happening at the same time I was starting to write songs and play shows. Mm. And so, those were kind of the two things that were very sort of tandem. But music has always been more fascinating to me. Like I love being funny and I love stand up and that stuff, but music is a lot more challenging. Like it's just such a, and it covers so many emotions, you know, like humor is wonderful, but you know, you can't reminisce as much with something that's funny, you know, where a song can just, man, you feel like you're 10 years old on your bike riding through the middle of Georgia again. You know what I mean? It's like, so I think for me, music has always been had more of a pull because it's just so much more, it's more colors in that palette. But the older I've gotten, you know, humor, I've done more of it. I'll tell you this too. I think, one thing that's been so fun for me, the older I've gotten doing more of the humor stuff is I did a bunch of stand-up shows a couple of years ago that were just stand-up, like no guitar or anything. And I had a woman after the show who's a friend of a friend come back and backstage because she was with this guy and we were just kind of talking and she said, man, that show, and this was just stand-up, so there's no music. She said, thank you for doing that. That really blessed me. And I was like, thanks. Like I said, what do you mean? She said, I mean that. It just really blessed me. And I was like, I don't understand what you mean by bless you. She's like, I was in a bad mood before I got here. Mm. You made me laugh. Mm. I get to now go home to my kids and I will be happy to see them. I'm not carrying all that junk in. Mm. And I was like, oh my gosh, I've never, in my 38 years at the time, 39 years, I was like, I've never thought about humor being a blessing. And it was this massive paradigm shift for me, because I was like, oh, this isn't just a circle on itself. This is something I can give to people. I mean, that's why I'm doing these videos every morning. It's like, I love to do them, but I think it's really fun to have something I can give people in this weird season to be like, hey, like laugh for a minute, maybe a couple times if you watch it again later today. And wow, you know, so it's a weird thing to sort of realize that humor can be such a gift like that. But I think that the last couple of years, it's changed a lot of the way I think about it, because I'm like, no, this is something that really affects people, you know?
How did you get the confidence to be able, I mean, you stepped out with music first. It seems like, I don't know your whole life, but I know as a musician. And then when you started doing the comedy music stuff, I thought, holy cow. Well, I remember seeing you. I think you actually came to North Point for some event. Maybe it was Catalyst or something. And I remember at that time thinking, this guy is hilarious. And then I heard years later you were doing comedy and music. And I thought, of course he is. How did you get was that hard for you to step out and say, I'm going to do that. I'm going to do a comedy and music show.
So this is a funny story. My manager at the time, a dear friend of mine, a guy named Chris Detray, this is a decade ago. He was like, hey, I think you need to do a stand-up show at some point. Because, you know, you just get bits. I mean, if you've ever seen a acoustic songwriter, they're going to have bits.
Sure. They might not call them set bits, up a song.
Yeah. And before you know it, they become really tight. You know, it's like they become a very kind of indestructible little piece of the show. So Chris was just like, look, I think you need to do a stand-up show. And I said, okay, this is a true story. I said, the only way I'll do it is if you book it and don't tell me what it is. And then like 2 weeks ahead of time, tell me so I can't get out of it. Wow. I don't know if you know that scene in Young Frankenstein where he says, you have to put me in the cage with the monster. And no matter what I say, don't let me out. And like, okay. And then the first thing he does, turn around, he goes, let me out. You know, it kind of felt like that. And so I did the shows, sure enough, he booked him. I tried to get out of him. I couldn't, but we did two nights, at this tiny little coffee shop here in Nashville where it was invite only. I controlled the list. That was my rule. I was like, if I can invite only my friends. So I did two nights and just kind of gathered intel afterwards of like, you know, what did y'all think? Was it fun? Did you enjoy it? And I was like, yes. Like, it's obviously not like polished, but there's something there. And then for about 3 years after that, I did a place called the Bell Court here in Nashville, which is a theater, which is about 400 or 500. And it sold out every time, which was always terrifying. But was really fun. Like in the middle of the show, it was just like summoning lightning. Like I just felt like this is like the body alive. Was this feeling of like, who knows?
In a different way from music?
Very much so. Because you live and die by the sword with comedy. I mean, Sting on a bad night is still Sting. Humor on a bad night is not funny. Mm. And so I think like, you know, I think you just, there's no net. You're just going. And so there's a real sense of electricity to knowing like you're living and dying by these jokes. And so, so I did that and then kind of took a break for a few years. And then a couple of years ago, the same manager, Chris, was like, hey, what if we try to do this sort of tandem night where it's like music humor. And I was very, very, very firm on like, I do not want them to be the same. I need a clear demarcation, line of demarcation. So I did 45 minutes of music and then I would take an intermission, come out with nothing but a mic and do, you know, humor for 45 minutes. And then I do an encore and that was a night. And it was so much fun. It was really taxing. But the weirdest thing about it, Clay, was I would get done with that night. I did like the first four or five of them. And I was so mad because I was like, I'm not getting this. I just wanted people to be like, you did it. Like, I can't, you're like high-fiving each other in the rows. And I'm like, who knew? I don't know, guys. But I remember after doing it, same manager, I walked back and I was like, third or fourth show, and he's like, what's wrong? I was like, man, they're just not, it's not, I don't feel like they're as excited as I wanted to be. And he's like, what do you mean? I said, well, like, this is hard. Like, I'm putting together two polished sets that are pretty bulletproof. This is not what I do. And he's like, here's what you've forgotten is that they know you're funny. And I was like, oh yeah, I hadn't thought about that. He's like, so they're coming in like, yeah, he's going to be funny. I mean, Dave's funny. And I was thinking it was going to be like, is he going to do it? I don't know. You know, where I think everybody was kind of like, oh, it's going to be funny. And, you know, but they didn't know. I mean, you know, like speaking anything like that, it's hard. It's hard to do. And I think, and I was learning so much of that real time. Like I was learning timing, how to do that joke doesn't work there. Why doesn't that joke work? It works later in the set, or, you know, and you're doing all this real time, adding too much, pull back, less, add more next time, you know. And people are just like, that's cool, awesome, man. And I was like, shouldn't they be like throwing roses or like naming children after me or something? And it just, but I realized, like, I think people, because my brand has always had a piece of humor in it, they were like, well, yeah, I mean, that's what we paid to come see.
Hey, I want to talk about the album. I know, you know, I, what is this for you? How many, is this like 10 total albums?
11, I think.
11. So, I know you have to be excited about every album. Like, you can't put something out that you're not excited about. I've written 2 books, so I'm so far behind you. But I get, like, you know, you go on something like this and you're like, oh, if I should have written this years ago, this is going to change everyone's life. Can you be honest? Like, do you like it? Like, are you in love with it? Are you like, oh my gosh, I really am proud of this?
I think it's the best group of music I've ever put out. I think some of that has to do with it's only 7 songs, so it feels like there's no fat. But I'm really proud of it. I tell you too, I'm proud of it for another couple of reasons. One, I wrote all these by myself, and I write 90% of my records by myself anyway, but this is truly a piece of art that's just me. And then, you know, I think also that I produced it by myself, which is a big deal.
So it's not just
you know, I love the songs. It's like, this is me the most distilled. This is what I can do, be it good or bad. And so I think what has been so encouraging, and I think too, maybe the third piece of it, it's really honest. You know, I realized that a couple of years ago, writing a record called Who Knew It Would Be So Hard to Be Myself. I was like, I want to try to write more honest songs. Not that I've ever been not truthful, but I think I heard somebody describe a song one time as really like, you need to listen to this. Like, this is an important song. And I thought, what makes a song important? And I think one of the biggest things is that they're truthful. Like, there's a piece of truth in the song that you kind of have to reckon with, you know? And so I've tried to continue with that. And I think this album has those elements. So for me, it feels like, I'm 20 years into a career. So it kind of feels like at some point I should be getting to where I know how to do this. And I feel like there's some of that too. And so it's, you know, it's the 20th year record. It's like, I've done this for long. I kind of feel like, you know, you kind of know what you're doing a little better, you know?
What, out of the 20 year career, what's the moment where you're like, oh my gosh, I've made it? Do you ever get there?
You know, I think there's little, for me, I think everybody's different. I think there were a lot of Ebenezers, if you will, that were like that. I think one was
And as a pastor, I definitely will, by the way.
Hey, you're welcome. Estimate drop there for you. I think for me, you know, one of those moments was realizing people I respected knew my music, you know, like when I was meeting or hanging out with Bonnie Raitt or John Mayer or, you know, Taylor Swift asked me to open for her earlier in her career. All these things that sort of felt like, holy crap, like, this is cool. Like, I'm noticed.
Yeah.
And then two was like, when you realize some of those people become your peers is really profound. Mm-hmm. You know, this sense of like, they don't look at me like young buck. They're like, no, that's Dave. He's with us. Like, he's in this whole crew. And then, you know, you have just successes where a certain amount of people come to playing the Ryman for the first time was just bananas, you know?
What year was that?
Gosh, 4 years ago, 5 years ago. So, you know, just little things like that really feel affirming, but I think you're right. I mean, thanks to Adam and Eve, there's this depravity in me that still is trying to justify my existence. You
know? Right. So, made it. What? I'm still working on that.
I'm not, thanks to sin, I'm never quite satiated. So I think it's trying to temper, you know, those things, you know, like a real gratitude of being here, but also knowing like what makes us fun is trying to have more things to keep, you know. And I think too, I don't know if you feel this way doing what you've done for so long, but there's also a part of me that's like, wow, I really think I've never been better than I am right now. So it gets fun to create more because you feel like I'm creating better stuff. I'm doing a better job because I just done it long enough to really look at what I'm doing and go, oh man, this is well made. Like, I support this little product I made. Let's see if people like it. Where before it's like, I did that? You know, it's like, now it's like, no, I did do that. It took me a long time to fake that little thing, you know?
Hey, back to Dreaming in Electric Blue. Paint the picture. So you write an album, you've got these seven songs. Is there a context for it that is in your mind that you're like, oh, here's the way you're going to love this album. Go do this in your life, put this on, and you're going to love it. Is there a scene? Is there a context that if somebody would put themselves in, they will absolutely love it? Does it work like that at all?
That's a great question. First of all, that's a really intuitive question. Thanks for asking that. I mean, it's always sort of Swedish salt baths, midnight, kind of that midnight.
Just
12,
in general, I'm a Swedish salt bath guy.
I need you hot. I need you relaxed. I need you exfoliated, you know, expunged of toxins. I think for me, one of the things that's always been consistent with my records is they're really eclectic, you know? So some of what I'm doing to answer your question, which again is a really great question, is I'm trying to actually sort of give you a moment for every moment, you know, a song for every moment. So if you're thinking about your kids and there's kind of that slow-mo moment where you're sitting in the yard with your wife and the kids are running around, and you have a song that goes, oh, this is, but if you're dancing and you want to have fun, you got that moment, or, you know, you, whatever nostalgia, whatever that moment is. And so I think for my records, I've always wanted to be a soundtrack for people. And because I think if you can do that, music really stays with people.
Yep.
If they associate your music with moments, then it tends to be important to them for a long time. And so I think for me, I've always wanted to make music that did that, that kind of wasn't something that was a flash in the pan or a moment, you know, like a little singular second, but really was like, man, this song reminds me of my first child and being born or whatever. And now when we hear it, that's what it reminds me of. That's the most profound part about music to me, is it really chemically does things to us, you know? And so I just feel so privileged when people take my music into their lives and do that and go like, hey, like we listened that record and this, and now that song always means that to us, you know? It's really powerful and it's a huge compliment, you know?
The quarantine, let's talk about that for a couple minutes to conclude. What are your thoughts on, you know, we do this, every weekday, we're doing a noon prayer gathering on Facebook Live, and almost everyone that we do will have someone that will put in the comment section, hey, I'm really struggling. I'm really wrestling with what God is doing right now. I don't understand where he is. I don't understand why this is happening. How are you contextualizing all of that as far as what God has to say or what God is doing with all of the, it feels like there's still a lot of suffering right now. I mean, the unemployment rates, the mental health, the just the physical health, the actual virus itself. How do you frame all of that in your mind?
This is so profound. I had a friend of mine last night say this, and it blew my mind. But he was talking about Tim Keller was asked this. And so this is not my answer, but I think it is a profound answer. He said, you know, the hard part of this for a lot of us is this feels like suddenly there's suffering.
Yeah,
but
right.
He said, in a world context, suffering is not anything new. And I think the beautiful thought about it, you know, when you think about however many couple hundred thousand Chinese people die, you know, they're persecuted, that are believers a year,
right? Yeah,
whatever that number is, it's crazy. So suffering is always there. It's just that for a lot of us, it doesn't feel like it is. And so I think what's profound about that is that it shows that God hasn't changed. Like God, who deals with suffering, has always dealt with suffering, but our lives can fluctuate in and out of the suffering. And so I think I take so much comfort in knowing, oh yeah, God's not going like, oh my God, what's happening? He's like, no, I know where suffering is always. I've suffered, you know, is greater than anyone has. So I think to me, that's very comforting, because as much as I feel like, oh my God, I'm grabbing everything and the ship is shaking and you're like, we're going to make it through. And I'm like, God, how could you? And he's like, hey, just so you know, like this is normal in a lot of other places, you know? And so I think for me, it gives me a lot of context to realize that this is not something that God's sort of like in the manual going like, what do we do with it?
What do we do with the pandemic?
Right. Is it in Hebrew? What is the Hebrew? I'm in the wrong letter. C? Oh, you know, where it's like, you know, So I think for me, that's really helpful.
Hey, Dave, thank you. There are going to be so many people that are going to love this conversation at our church. I was telling somebody, they were like, Dave Barnes on the Bucket Church podcast, that feels right. I said, I feel like if you did a Venn diagram between Dave Barnes fans and congregants of our church, it would be like just a perfect circle.
So we're
all in on you. Thanks for doing what you're doing. Keep doing it. Keep up with the characters too.
Well, I'll tell you, it was fun to get your email, because I think, you know, that I have such a long history with y'all's church and with North Point, and it feels like that world, when I actually look at how long I've known y'all and done events and stuff, it's fun to think back that far. So I'm thankful to be here.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Buckhead Church podcast. If you'd like more content, you can always check out our services live or on demand at buckheadchurch.org. And if you want to experience community anytime, anywhere, go to buckheadchurch.org/groups.